And welcome to the program, Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KABC. And happy Sunday evening. Good to be here, back in the studio. Busy weekend. Busy weekend, and always interrupted by these shows, and it's the best interruption in the whole world. I love being here, talking to you here. From, as usual, an undisclosed location deep behind the orange curtain. And God, a new week is starting. A new week is starting tomorrow, and I'm barely ready. You know, I always try to go to work on Sundays. You know, as it works out for me this way with the show, I like to get prepped for the week. And one of the things I read one time, you know, this is something that Ivanka Trump talks about. Because, you know, she's an executive in her father's company. She talks about motherhood and how, you know, being a mom to a kid. Now, how do you balance that, of course? And how do you be productive? And she says, I leave a little early on Friday to start my weekend, and I have a solid weekend, an entire weekend with my kids. And then what I do is I go to work Sunday evening. And I just put my head in the game. You know, I go there, I see what I've got going so that Monday morning I can hit the ground running. I remember reading that and I thought, yeah, I do that already. And it's really is effective. It really is. And if you've got that kind of job where Monday just immediately starts, and at the firm, we always start every Monday, 8 a.m. with a meeting. The Monday morning meeting to get everybody on the same page and ready. Because I find that most people come in on Monday and they're half dead, right? So the first thing you have to do as an employer is bring your, you know, yeah, bring the paddles, you know, the defibrillator, you know, or a funnel, a coffee funnel. Right, Missy? If you want a successful business, I have a pro tip for you. Coffee maker. You've got to have an industrial coffee maker. Keep people caffeinated, productivity goes up, guaranteed. You know, I'll tell you, yesterday we had a great show. We went through Hillary, went through all the nonsense with these emails, big scandal, AP, the story that the news organ, the one mainstream media outlet right now that has had the guts to publish the story. And so you understand kind of where it all came from. One thing I didn't talk about, and I want to mention briefly, is that Hillary Clinton, the whole reason why the story is breaking now, there's two reasons for it, my opinion. One is that right now Hillary is absolutely 100% running a clear strategy to try to just run the clock. So what she's doing is, so she believes, by the way, and there's a piece in the Politico from last week that says, you know, hey, look, with about 75, now about 70 days left to go in the campaign, until election day, Hillary is just stalling. She's not publicly making any statements about these emails. She's not addressing it. She's using surrogates, but very minimally. You know, and I would add, part of the reason is that is every time she opens her mouth on it, she sounds like an idiot. Okay? I mean, you can't just keep denying something. It's like with Comey. You know, she told, when she went on Fox News, you remember this interview with Chris Wallace? And Comey, the FBI director that you know gave that devastating press conference that all but eviscerated Hillary, the non-indictment, you know, she gets on Fox News and says to Chris Wallace that Comey had described her answers to the public on the email scandal as truthful. Of course, Wallace wasn't going to let her get away with that, but it does show the kind of... It's better if she doesn't say anything because her comments that deny it become fodder for the opposition. The other thing is, and this is really interesting because it plays into the narrative that the press is using right now. They're actually taking Hillary's narrative and adopting it as their own. And I'll read, this is just a little segment here from the Politico piece. The no response / muted response. Now, they want a muted response rather than a 5-alarm fire, and that's a Clinton insider saying that. They're like, our response to this is going to be very, very limited, very on the down low. And Politico writes that it's a strategy born in part of a belief held deeply by Hillary Clinton herself that the email controversy is a fake scandal and that voters are as sick of it as she is. Now, I've seen this, heard this repeated dozens of times. This is what it tells you when you hear, I'll give you a little pro tip. When you see the same phrase being reported and echoed by journalists, and it's not a quote, it's something that they're getting off the record from inside the campaign, which means the campaign is originating this as a talking point. And certainly in the media side, on the left-wing side, left-wing media, it is the talking point narrative of what it's a non-issue. It's no big deal. There's nothing to see here. Move along. I'm sick and tired of this. Leave me alone. And you know what? The voters are sick of this too. Move on. So you know how long the Clinton State Department refused to turn over the records that the AP requested on this thing? Try 3 years. That's right. Clinton received, as Secretary of State, 240 Freedom of Information requests from 2009 to 2013. And guess how many of them she responded to? Only 3. That's right. It's like 3 is the lucky number. They stonewall for 3 years. They only turn over satisfy 3 requests, which probably were the only 3 requests that didn't contain incriminating information. And they justified their delay by claiming, oh, it's the complexity, it's this, it's that. And, you know, by the way, when you keep adding new requests, it just slows us down. It's going to take us years. And you'll remember, if you go back about 2 or 3 months, we talked about it here on the program. And I was apoplectic over how, well, somebody in the State Department declared that, you know, we're going to need 45 years to satisfy all these information requests. And so what happened was, is AP and a few others, including the now defunct Gawker, Judicial Watch, Citizens United, and I think even Vice News, they all ended up suing the State Department. And this is important. Let me tell you, this is really important. Imagine this. There's something called the Freedom of Information Act. It is law. And it is law because we believe in a transparent government. We do. This is something that is fundamentally part of who we are as Americans. So if something isn't specifically marked classified, and there are different layers of that, we've learned more than we even want about that, thanks to Hillary. How our government conducts business, even if it's behind closed doors, is something that the public has a right to know. And so imagine this. You have Obama, the Obama administration, because that's what the State Department falls under. You have the Clinton, you have the Obama administration, who promised, by the way, if you go back to 2008, to become the most transparent administration in all of time. Do you remember this? Obama actually promised to be the most transparent, to be the most transparent presidency in history. And it's absurd because, of course, none of that materialized, and all these requests. So it was a stall tactic. And she's doing the same thing now. She did it with Benghazi. You know, there's nothing to see here. There's nothing to see here. Delayed her testimony for weeks and weeks because she claimed that she fell and had an injury. Of course, now she's claiming her health is completely fine. And it all is part of the Clinton pattern of deception, of lies, of political opportunism. And it can't be permitted. It can't be permitted. So I'm telling you, when we look at the entire thrust of where Trump's campaign is going, he is, I think right now, devastatingly on message. If I were Hillary, and if Hillary, first of all, if Hillary really is so clueless, where she thinks that, you know, this scandal, you know, she has this deeply held belief that this is a fake scandal. If she really believes that, then she's delusional. But I don't think that's the case. I think that she's very much aware that she needs to deny vehemently, the same way that Bill denied, you know, things like, I did not have sexual relations with that woman. But what Trump is doing right now is he's getting back to the basics. Trade, immigration, and he's taking his immigration policy and he's refining it. And if you think, you know, the media is trying to make a huge amount of hay out of the fact that Trump is doing an about-face, he's flip-flopping, and that he's going to alienate his core voters. But Trump has figured out, his new team have figured out, that he's got 40-odd percent of the vote tied up, signed, sealed, and delivered, and those people are loyal Trumpists pretty much no matter what. But you cannot win an election with 40% of the vote. Not unless you're Bill Clinton and you got Ross Perot in the game. You can't do it. So what he needs to do is find an extra 10%, maybe as little as 8%, but certainly at least be a healthy lead, 10% of people out there that are on the fence, that are swing voters, and bring them together to get a majority of the vote. And the race is tightening up because he's clarifying his message. He's keeping it simple on the economy, targeting Clinton. And as these attack ads roll out, it's not going to be pretty. And the drive-by media, they don't get any of this. None of this. And I'll give you a great example when we come back right after this. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KABC.
We shall fight on the airwaves. We shall fight on Twitter and Facebook. We shall broadcast our program, whatever the cost may be. And if Sam Nation lasts for 1,000 years, men will say this was their finest hour.
Hi! Okay, we're back. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation Talk Radio, 790 KBC. And I'm going to try to summarize for you or explain to you a little bit about what I've really been thinking about this whole thing and why this race isn't what it seems. Because if I look, you know, well, 2 weeks ago, of course, everybody's talking about how Trump is dead in the water. And he reorganizes, and again, they say he's dead in the water. And they say, well, Hillary's cited some obscure poll. Hillary's 20 points high over here in this state, and 18 here, and 15 and 10. And it's done. I mean, Hillary shouldn't quite be measuring the curtains in the White House, but maybe she can start to. And that was the premise of it. And it bothered me because I feel a lot of the narrative that is put out there in the media. And again, when you say media, who are we talking about? We're not talking about local affiliates. We're not talking about KTLN News and your Oklahoma station and your Santa Fe station. We're not talking about local affiliates. We're talking about NBC, CBS, CNN, MSNBC, right? And these people that are reporting the news, and also the talking heads too. You can't forget the talking heads. These people that we watch on TV, and the people that write either columns or they're writing news stories, content for news sites. These are people that are not just inside the Beltway people, because of course they are. They're living inside of a political bubble, but they're also generally people from major metropolitan areas. This is a fact. You know, when we joke about America and this, you know, flyover country, and it's true. You know, how many people do you know that have been to New York however many times but have never set foot in South Dakota? It's a normal thing. And what you know, there's this article that came out in the Post. And it's written by Selena Zito. And the premise, you know, the premise of the article is she's one of these people I'm talking about that I'm looking at TV and I see, you know, whoever it is. It can be Krauthammer. It could be somebody on CNN, a conservative liberal, but they're Washington, D.C., L.A., New York based. And they're inside the Beltway people, which is why from the very beginning, these people got this whole thing wrong from the start. If you go back just a few months, I know it's ancient history in both radio and politics, but just a few months, at every turn, people were predicting Trump's doom and demise. And what I want you to do is when you tune into this program, when you tune into us on Saturday at 3 and Sunday at 6, that you walk away from it. And when you hit your office water cooler on Monday morning, when you're getting that coffee I was talking about delivered to you intravenously by your profit-mongering employer, you are best equipped out of anybody in the office to say things that are not just timely, but will actually, in a way, forecast the future. Because you know, yesterday we talked a little bit about that LA Times tracking poll and how it's tightened up in a week. And also, we talked about how Latino support for Trump has shot up 10 points. But do you know what's interesting in all that, in that tracking poll? The most interesting statistic is in that enormous week of change. In that week of change where I told you that Trump booting Manafort, I said this last week, was going to be ground shifting. I told you it was going to lead to good stuff because Trump needs to get in touch with his core ideology, with his core anti-establishment message, anti-free trade, okay? His protectionist message, labor protections, immigration, and, you know, terrorism, all economy, all the stuff that are Trump's strongest talking points, he needed a return to and not keep getting distracted by all this peripheral stuff. So if you're just tuning in, let me explain what we're talking about. We're getting to why you listening to the show are ahead of the curve and have been ahead of the curve for months now. Because in that AP tracking poll, even though Trump's Latino support shoots up 10%, it's not in the headline. It's not in the headline. And consequently, because of that, a very important section of the poll that deals, well, I'll get to it here. The breakdown. The who do you think will win? Unchanged. And still, overwhelmingly, people believe that Hillary's going to win. It's really telling. That is really important. Because it says that conventional wisdom has it that Hillary's going to win. And I'm telling you, these polls, by and large, well, these polls all depend on an accurate sample. And the accurate sample means that you're bringing people in. You're finding people that best represent the public at large. And it also assumes that the people that are voting are all listening and getting their cues from the news people that are reporting from where? From New York, LA, and Washington. And here's the thing. These people in New York, LA, and Washington don't have any clue what's going on in the rest of America. They don't understand, and this is what this gal Zito writes about. She talks about how, you know, well, look, if you drive anywhere in Pennsylvania, all of a sudden you leave the cities, you go down these turnpikes, you turn left, turn right down country road, and there's Trump signs everywhere. Now, let me ask you, are you a Trump supporter? Maybe you are. I'm going to ask you another question. Would you ever put a sticker on your car in Los Angeles? Well, not if you love your car. That's the short answer. Because you know that some jack is going to vandalize your car. It's just going to happen. Because here in these metropolitan areas, we're so consumed with the narrative that, oh, Trump, I mean, he does just got these ridiculous things. I mean, no serious person can be for Trump. And no, oh, this is just, I mean, really, Trump is a candidate for rubes. For rubes and country bumpkins. I mean, you're a racist if you're for Trump. You don't even understand how the economy works, you idiot. And is that how you feel as a Trump supporter? There was that story about Trumposexuals. You remember this? Trumposexuals. That being a Trump supporter is something like being gay, but, you know, 30 years ago, where you don't really want to come out of the closet. You got to get the courage to come out and admit to your friends that it's okay. You know, this is weird. Am I the only one here? Am I the only one that likes Trump? And I've told you, too, this is how polling works. Have you ever been polled? Have you ever had a pollster call you? Well, first of all, the people that are smart and that vote and that, who has time to sit there and answer 20 questions from a pollster? If a pollster hits you at home, calls you up on your landline, which most people don't even have anymore, calls you up and says, "Hey, Mr. So-and-so, do you have time to talk to us?" No, I'm just sitting down at dinner with my kids. Leave me the hell alone. It's true. So that sample size starts to get limited to people who are just, I don't want to belabor the point on that. But here's an important phenomenon. And come November after the election, let's check in on this. Because one explanation for a Trump victory will be this. You have a black family at home, at dinner, pollster calls, and the person who picks up the phone, the head of the household, is quietly inside, privately, kind of liking this Trump guy. He doesn't really believe Trump is a racist, and he understands that the Democrats have led the black community by the nose. But he doesn't talk about it. He doesn't admit it. He doesn't want to share that with his friends. I know this is true. I see it. So it will be borne out. I believe it will be shown in the exit polling that's done. And at any rate, it'll be shown in the results. So the person, the pollster, calls and says, "Hell, sir, what do you think?" "Oh, no, no, Trump. I'm a Hillary man." But inside, he's a secret Trumpist. I'm not saying a diehard Trump guy, but he's a secret Trumpist. Well, maybe not even a Trumpist, just a little Trump curious. And this is happening, and it's not just I'm not just singling out, you know, black voters. I'm even saying there are some registered Democrats, and they're sitting at home, and they've got their extended family over and their friends. You know, I mean, my opinions I talk about openly, and I share it with thousands and thousands of people every day. But a lot of people, a lot of people out there are very private when it comes to their opinions. Especially when their opinion they perceive opens them up to ridicule. And there is really, I mean, I can't remember, certainly not, I really can't remember any candidate that is as polarizing as Trump when it comes to, he's the most socially unacceptable candidate. He's probably the literal opposite of what it was like to declare that you were for Obama in 2008. It was like the coolest thing to do, right? Oh, I'm for Obama. I like that. I was a Republican. I'm for Obama. Being for Trump is literally the exact opposite of that. And it's and it's creating a silent majority of voters that will take to the polls in November and surprise us. I want to talk about political correctness when we come back. Of course, one of Trump's favorite topics, but maybe the tide is turning on college campuses, believe it or not. Back after this, Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KBC.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, here's Johnny.
Now, as an added spot tonight, I just wanted to let you guys know that we are subjugating our entire show to Sam Nation because apparently he's right and the rest of everyone is wrong.
All right, we're back. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790, reporting to you from an undisclosed location deep behind the orange curtain. And here, I want to let you know, we are a macro aggression talk show. So we don't, when there are no trigger warnings here, this is it. You're listening, prepare to be offended. And if you aren't offended here and there, I'm not doing my job. Not a safe space. You know, I'll tell you another place that is not a safe space. Well, you know, I'm going to talk about my friend, Attorney James Bergner, Sweet James. You know, one of the types of cases he handles are dog bites. And I need to talk to him about this because I could see this being a major problem. I mean, it's bad enough. There are dogs out there that just need to take a nibble. I mean, they do. They just, they see a human leg and it's. Well, don't say dog whistle, but yes, it's a call of the wild. It's instinct. It's nature, not nurture. Which is, you know, those people that have their little babies, they take pictures on Instagram of their little babies with like their pit bulls cuddling their baby. And I just, anyway, don't get me started. Yeah, good. Fine. But it's crazy stuff. I'm telling you now more than ever, no leg is safe because KFC has introduced sunscreen that smells like fried chicken. Now, I'm going to tell you right now, if you deliver mail for the USPS, do not use this product. Yeah, apparently they have an SPF 30 sunscreen. For reasons that remain, and I think, in my opinion, questionable, decided to get into the skincare game. I don't know if it actually uses any fat byproduct or any, what maybe extra creamy, you know. But yeah, it's the article says that the product is imbued with the alluring scent of fried chicken. I don't know what focus group they use to come with. well, yeah, so it's going to be KFC's extra crispy sunscreen. And this is it. Harmful ultraviolet rays will bounce off your skin while the lovely fragrance rays penetrate it to give you a healthy chicken aroma. Is this is real? I don't know. It's an actual product. And I'm just telling you, you put this on your legs, you're going to get chomped. And if you do, I'm telling you right now, you're not going to want to just sue the dog's owner. You're going to want to sue KFC. And you're going to need the right lawyer to do that. And that lawyer is Sweet James Bergner. And look, no matter what kind of case, you know, and I don't mean to make light of it. When you have a devastating injury, no matter what occurs, you want to get answers. And one of the things that a lot of people do is they really just don't want to necessarily rock the boat. They don't want to get out. They don't want to cause problems. They call the insurance company. They just want to work things out. And the reality is the insurance company, they love to work things out with you so long as they get their way. And so just even if you don't want to sue, you don't want to open a claim, you don't want to do anything, call Sweet James and get an opinion on what you ought to do and get some questions answered from an independent source that has your best interest in mind. It's pretty easy. All you have to do is call 1-800 1-800-881-2021, 1-800-881-2021, or visit sweetjames.com and call him. He's a good guy. I promise you, it'll be pain-free. A lot less painful than that dog chomp. That's right. Robbie, are you gonna pick up a tube of this stuff? Kentucky Fried Chicken, extra crispy sunscreen? No? Yeah, I think we got to send you out there. What I want to do is we're going to... Now, hear me out. I think this would be a great thing to do for maybe a little extra on the show. We'll put it up on Instagram. We got to get a Snapchat. That's what we ought to do. And we got to cover Robbie in this head to toe and send him to a dog park. Yeah. Yeah, Robbie's not laughing now. He's... Well, at any rate, back to the news of the day. You know, one of Trump's earliest successes really was being plain spoken, plain speaking, saying things as they are. And you know, his whole perspective on this was to turn the tide against political correctness. In fact, he declared a war on political correctness. And by and large, I got to tell you, by and large, was very successful at it. So much so, I think you'll recall, we talked last week about Clint Eastwood. Kind of quietly, not quietly, but in a roundabout way, endorsing what Trump is doing and saying, we just got to get over this. We're becoming way too sensitive. And for those of you who've been listening to the program for a while, you'll know that one of my pet peeves in the entire world is the the mollycoddling of our youth. Because I think if you listen to any Democrat, they'll tell you, the children are our future. I say, yeah, of course. Duh. They're our future. And if we don't raise them right, we're screwed. And by the way, it's not a village that makes that happen. It's you, the parent. And so from time to time, I'll share with you little tidbits about my kids. And well, they start. I'll give you an update. What's the update? I've got two kids in elementary school right now. I'm getting old. And if you have kids, you'll maybe identify with this. Time just moves so slowly when they're little. And then the minute that they start school. Well, elementary school, right? Preschool kind of doesn't count. But once they hit kindergarten, it's like, holy moly, snap fast. We're off to the races. And I got a third grader now. I don't know what happened. He was a baby. I still remember holding him. And he's now in the third grade. And Vera, she is now in kindergarten. So that's pretty exciting, and my kids go to public school, and that's, you know, that's part of it. And I, you know, you've got, it's a, being a parent is a series of difficult decisions, and one of the hardest things to do as a parent is to let your kid get hurt a little bit here and there, because the natural thing is you want to protect your child. And it's instinctual, because when your kid's a little baby, you have to protect them from everything. But, you know, as they get older, you have to let them fall here and there. You have to let them scrape a knee. You have to let them ride their bike maybe a little further than you would want. Because you have to let them begin to get their independence, begin to let them push their limits and be responsible. And this is why this whole movement on these college campuses, this safe space BS is literally going to destroy our country. Because the snowflake generation of just babied adults, right? Babied grown-ups. And I'm using air quotes. You can't see them, but I'm using some very loud air quotes. adults, 22-year-olds that are leaving college, okay, and have been can't read anything that's controversial unless there's 10 trigger warnings saying what you're about to watch is disturbing. What you're about to read is disturbing. And worse yet, college campuses that are banning public speakers because they might be controversial. And what do I always tell you? I tell you life is controversial. You are going to have a boss that you don't like. Yeah, if you work for me and are listening, that could be you. But you know, you're gonna work with people you don't like. You're going to get into confrontations with people throughout life. It's how you resolve conflict that makes you a successful person. It's not how you avoid conflict, how you're oblivious to conflict. It's how you resolve it. This is what matters. And if you don't, if you want to create bully-free zones in school and you want to create just, you know, this posh, you know, velvet bubble for children, and then after all that is said and done, you send them to college and just extend that bubble, what are we doing? We end up with a bunch of people coming out of college, and I can tell you this firsthand, and I have in past shows, they're not hireable. Because you want somebody who's a problem solver. And guess what? If you deal with the public, if you're in a business that deals with the public sometimes is difficult. There are some real a-holes out there. And you've got to learn how to deal with it. And in my line of work, I deal with human tragedy. I see people are hurt who have terrible things happen to them. We look at pictures sometimes that are terrible, that are heartbreaking. I don't want a bunch of people working at my office who can't handle it, that start to cry uncontrollably and turn into a hot mess every time they see something that might be objectionable. And so we're producing these kind of adults, and I'm just sick of it. And I know you are too. So please stay tuned, because I have hope for you. There's hope. Somebody's taking a stand, and you'll be pleased. From my birthplace. That's the clue I'm going to give you. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation Talk Radio, 790 KABC.
In this present crisis, government is the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. And Sam Nation is the solution. Of course, you need jelly beans for that.
Now, you know, you think that these microaggressions are only on college campuses. It's nonsense, because this BS, this politically correct BS, is spilling over everywhere. And just college campuses seem to be the largest propagators of it. You know, I came across one story, I'll get back to the point and tell you about, I'll give you the good news in a minute, but God, I felt so bad. I read this. There's a rodeo clown that was fired for comments about gender identity at the Calhoun County Fair. Yes, that's right. In Michigan, there's some, you know, to tell you, have you been ever to a fair like this? Been to a good, solid fair? I'm not talking about like LA County, Orange County. I'm talking like, you know, flyover country. Trump, where a lot of Trump people are, Trump supporters, Trumpists. Well, apparently there was some, let me explain what the rodeo clown does. Rodeo clown is like, he's like the warm-up act. He gets out there before the rodeo, and he's supposed to get the crowd all excited about everything. And he's supposed to be funny. He's supposed to be funny. And guess what? Humor, folks, humor is sometimes inappropriate and touches on things that are sensitive, which is what makes it funny. Yes, when you say things that play with some of the things that we are uncomfortable with, that is humor. I feel like I have to explain that now in 2016. Well, apparently this clown, this poor, unfortunate, now unemployed rodeo clown, says to the crowd, "Hey, you're either a boy or a girl, y'all understand? And if you're confused, then you need help, okay?" And that's all he did. And he got fired over it. It's crazy. And you know, and you know it's bad even when liberals are starting to fight back. This is always encouraging because Jerry Seinfeld, you know, notorious liberal, but also a funny guy. He's waded into this debate about colleges. He did this a while ago, but he keeps continuing to talk about it because he says, look, college kids, they're too politically correct for Seinfeld. Where was he talking about this? He doesn't do colleges anymore. He won't perform. He won't do his stand-up routine at college campuses because the students are too afraid. They don't get his humor. And so Seinfeld, probably one of the funniest men in America, right? Guy, his show touched a whole – I mean, his show was out. I'll give you some perspective on this. His show was out when I was in high school. Yeah, and I think his last show aired my senior year. So my generation – like many of you people out there, you know what I mean. We all thought Seinfeld was really funny. But our children are growing up in a world where they just say, yeah, that's sexist. You can't make a joke about gender identity. You can't make a joke about, you know, prejudice and race. You can't do it. It's just not funny. So there it is. Now for the good news. Finally, there's a college, actually a major university, that's fighting back on this. And when I read this excerpts of this letter that went out to prospective students, you are going to love it. So the University of Chicago has had it, and they have officially declared that they are finished with trigger warning, safe spaces, and the like. So what happened is a letter goes out to all the incoming freshmen that are presumably now starting classes. Let's see, when did this letter go out? I don't know if there's a date on it. But at any rate, besides the usual congratulatory language and that kind of thing, it declares, it says, the dean of students says, well, once you're here, you're going to discover that the University of Chicago's defining characteristics, one of our defining characteristics, is our commitment to freedom of inquiry and expression. What? This can't possibly be a university. What is this? Members of our community are encouraged to speak, write, listen, challenge, and learn without fear of censorship. Civility and mutual respect are vital to all of us. Freedom of expression doesn't mean that you have the freedom to harass or threaten others. But at times, this may challenge you and even cause, drumroll, may even cause discomfort. And here comes my favorite line. Down toward the bottom of the letter, it says, quote, our commitment to academic freedom means that we do not support so-called trigger warnings. We do not cancel invited speakers because their topics might prove controversial. And we do not condone the creation of intellectual safe spaces where individuals can retreat from ideas and perspectives at odds with their own. Mic drop. The University of Chicago. They get a gold star from the Sam Nation program. Now, you'll know the University of Chicago has historically been home to some very great thinkers. I think chief among them would be Milton Friedman, who, if you don't know who Milton Friedman is, great leading economist and I would say one of the founders intellectually of the neoconservative movement. But at any rate, University of Chicago's done it. Now, you got to understand, they're a lone entity out there. They're completely they're the first major university to do this. And, you know, the media is just agog. They're getting the vapors over this because they said, what is this? And let me tell you, other Ivy Leagues, they're worst. Almost the fancier the school, the more intellectually illegitimate they become with all this nonsense. Did I tell you about what happened at Brown? Brown University. Some of you listening might have kids that go to Brown. Heaven forbid a sizable portion of your money, of your income every year, is going to Brown University. You know, last year there was some controversy on campus regarding college rapes, and we went over this and we talked about it. But, you know, they're the ones, I don't know if we shared this, but they're the ones that created special rooms, like safe rooms. Like, I don't know. It sounds to me kind of like a padded cell, but these rooms had cookies. They had coloring books, bubbles, you know, like I don't know. Play-Doh, calming music. Let's see, what else did they have in there? Blankets, and also playing a video of frolicking puppies. And then, you know, so what's that supposed to do? I really want to know. First of all, what does college cost at Brown a year? Is $40,000 a year, $35,000 a year? It's a lot of money. And you throw, well, that's just tuition, okay? Then there's housing. So, you know, all in as a parent, you're paying north of $50,000 a year for your kid to go to Brown to sit in a padded cell eating, you know, eating cookies and blowing bubbles. You know, what is this? It's crazy. I would pay money to send my kid to school and put him in a padded cell with this, you know, recently fired rodeo clown. That's what I'd do. I mean, I want my kid, and this is the truth. I want my kid to listen to a radical left-wing guy. I want my kid to listen to people that I disagree with. I want my kid to be, I want them to, you've got to listen to other people and other people's opinions so that you form your own. And it's not just about sitting on a Moroccan poof somewhere or in a beanbag eating cookies and watching frolicking puppies on a screen and getting lulled into thinking that that's what your world is going to be like. And that is, I think, in part why the media, and I'm going to bring this back to Trump and what's going on in the election, because this explains in part why the media is so baffled by what's going on, why at every turn they're mystified by Trump's success. Because, and here's the thing, because they are sitting in virtual safe spaces in these newsrooms and in these cafes and fancy restaurants, jetting around, living their bi-coastal lifestyle. And they're sitting with other people that think, whoa, Trump, I mean, oh. They sit around and they don't hear from anybody. They don't even want to listen to. For them, it's all trigger warnings. I don't want to even hear it. And they've all together dismissed Trump as a goof. And these are the people that are forming the consensus that we are all listening to on the evening news and on news shows and on the Sunday news shows and all these news programs and writing the kind of drivel that we're reading in these websites. And then we're wondering why they get things wrong. And who is the latest person to join Trump, Team Trump? Well, Nigel Farage. Who is he? The architect of Brexit. And you'll remember, Brexit, big vote. The people of Great Britain actually widely dismissed and media dismissed any chances of it succeeding. And then it succeeded by 3-4%. It won because there was a silent majority of people that were for it. So no matter how much you pretend, how much safe space you create out there, in the end, truth prevails. All right, we're out of time. Once again, have a great Sunday. Email me, sam@samnation.com. Visit the website, samnation, Patreon.com, where we got get the podcast if you missed any portion of this weekend's shows. And we will see you here again next Saturday, 3 p.m. God bless. Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation Talk Radio, 790 KBC.